I'm Regan Brandt, and this is the Insurance Chatter. What is the insurance industry talking about? What problems are insurtech solving? What trends are agents, brokers, underwriters, and executives thinking about? Every week, I sit down with a different person from across the insurance industry to discuss what's happening in their niche markets. I want to give you a behind-the-scenes look at risk, technology, data, and culture within one of the most exciting business sectors. Follow along to get pumped and see where the insurance industry is headed. Today, I'm sitting down with Mark Smith, president of K2 Insurance Services, a specialty MGA that is set to write nearly $1.5 billion of premium this year. Mark has spent over 30 years in the insurance industry, and as he states, life has been good to him. Over the 30 years, he's gone coast to coast and has been successful at every step of his career. It's been fun to get to know him, work closely with him, and be a small part of the K2 rocket ship journey. Before we get started, though, I'm going to ask him, what is the plate song to his life?
Well, watching some of the other ones, I did hear the music in the background, so I did think about this a little bit, and I would say number one, Life's Been Good by Joe Walsh. Big Eagles fan, love Joe Walsh, and Life's Been Good. Got Me Wrong from Alice in Chains, just because I do love that, the grunge music and the heavy metal.
Well, for the listeners, I was actually, when he was telling me which kind of genre he was going with, I'm like, whoa, this is a new Mark, like AC/DC rocking out guy. So this is going to be an exciting podcast. Give us a little bit of background.
Yeah, so I grew up in way upstate New York, right across the lake from Burlington, Vermont, an hour south of Montreal in the Lake Placid area. So very remote, small town, 1,800 people in the village. It doesn't even exist anymore because they can't provide services. So they decommissioned the village about 10 years ago, a little town called Keysville.
Okay.
Went to Siena College. Got into insurance because I saw somebody studying for an actuarial exam, asked what it was, took the perfect exam, passed, got an internship, and then ended up working for Continental in New Jersey.
So that was your first job?
I was an actuarial trainee and spent 4 years. It was a lot of fun because they hired five other people the same summer, and none of us were from that area. So we were a very close-knit group. They spent a lot of time together, and we were working on a lot of things that we probably shouldn't have been working on because there was a gap of vice presidents down to trainees. So we got exposed to a lot of things, and it was a great education, but a lot of great people in there, too.
So where'd you move after that?
I moved out to Honolulu. DNA bought Continental. Continental owned 60% of a company called First Insurance of Hawaii. They had been decimated by Hurricane Iniki. They'd gotten back on their feet. And they wanted on-site actuarial work. I had 4 years, four exams, so I was affordable and had never been west of Dallas. I didn't know anybody there, and I just packed up the bags and moved to Honolulu.
Oh, my gosh.
I lived on the 16th floor of a high-rise right in Honolulu, had a beautiful view of Diamond Head. I was about a mile from the beach, very close to work. Yeah, so it was great.
See, you're selling this insurance dream now. After that, because I know you were at Hanover.
I ended up quitting my job in Hawaii because I'd been introduced to my wife who had been working for Marsh, but she had quit her job and she was going to move to New York City. And we did the long distance thing for a little bit after she moved. And so I decided I couldn't live without her and quit my job and moved to New York and we got married.
Major brownie points. I'm going to have to tag your wife in this. You know, what a sweetheart romantic.
I joined Fireman's Fund at that time, which I was there for the next 9 years.
Has it always kind of been actuarial work, or did you transition into underwriting or more leadership? Yeah. Or at what point did that kind of transition happen?
Yeah, that started in Hawaii, where after the first year and a half, 2 years, we had gotten most of the rates and reserving in the place where the company needed to be. And I started working on special projects for the president, and he wanted to increase our breadth of product offering into larger accounts. Okay. And so I worked on a strategic plan where I interviewed a lot of agents and some other company people and wrote up a plan of how First Insurance could get into major accounts. When it got into that, got done it, I handed it over to him and he said, well, how'd you like to run the unit? I'd never spent a day in underwriting, and I got four underwriters and we were off and running, you know, writing things like Liberty House, some auto dealers, the Ritz-Carlton. We got into writing some, you know, nice accounts.
Yeah, well, and I'll fast forward to humble brag for you. So for those of you guys who don't know who K2 Insurance Service is, I think this year you guys might even blow past $1.5 billion of annual premium. We're close, right?
It'll be close.
And, you know, they have their hands in a lot of different, you know, companies, a lot of different products. Give us a little bit about, like, your day-to-day there. What are you doing for the company? How's K2, like, what's the secret sauce there?
Wow, that's a lot there. That could probably be like an hour or 2 hours, and the answer would vary greatly depending on the day.
Yeah.
You know, first off, I mean, we have a lot of great people. We have 24 different programs, so a lot of breadth over substantial amount of classes. And it's not that it's unfocused, because the people that are running the individual programs do such a great job in those programs, and all of them have the potential to get up to $20-25 million at a minimum, but we really like to get up to 50 million. We have five programs over 100 million. We have 9 total above 50, and I think 13 above 25. So it really is trying to facilitate something where you can get some scale. And the way that we've designated the ownership in the units allows people to get paid for the work that they do without the reliance of other people or consequences of other people. And the best people in the industry really do gravitate toward that. So the job that I have on a day-to-day basis is help those people do the best that they can in the roles that they're in. They are always, all of them are exceptional at underwriting and distribution management, you know, and helping them have some insights into their data and how they distribute product, the systems, competitive positioning is to try to help them understand what their competition is and how to position that, and just to challenge them on that. You know, we don't dictate to them what to do on a day-to-day basis, but that doesn't mean you can't challenge them, share information, see if you have a different point of view, and just help people think through things differently. Even if we completely agree with them, it's take the other side and get into a pretty good argument, and then at the end of the day, move forward from it.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things, you know, working with, one of the things I appreciate you about you guys is the entrepreneurial spirit that I feel like is still there in the organization, where sometimes these big companies, you kind of lose that feel. And, you know, that kind of leads me, I think you were coming on board with K2, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, like right at the beginning of the pandemic. Right?
Yeah, right in the middle of the stay at home order. So I was in the middle of either week one or week two was my first day.
So tell us a little bit about
it. Actually came together really, really quickly, because the company they were 1 to 2 weeks into having people work from home.
Okay.
And I think Becky Kilkenny drove a lot of that at the beginning, of helping people get prepared to work at home, because not all companies had the capacity to hand somebody a laptop, have them work at home and be connected. And the early stages of that actually went very, very well. And now the company wasn't highly connected with Zoom. It was using Teams. And at the beginning, Teams was not that great. It's come a long ways, and they accelerated, but there was some choppiness to it. But I think through the use of Teams, we were able to get connected to people very quickly. And I ended up having a lot of calls and face-to-face meetings with people, even though I couldn't travel. And I did, you know, did brave it starting in May of making, you know, 1 week a month out in San Diego, or to try to visit people. Or we had somebody, I think we had Jazz Chima and John Davis come down to Newport Beach, and we drove up to meet them so we could see some people face to face. But I think we found out early on that we were able to communicate really effectively with the online tools. One thing in that period of time, I mean, at the beginning of 2021, we did launch 8 new programs from scratch. And that meant that through the course of 2020, we were trying to work with, you know, 10 to 15 carriers on pitching them new programs and that was where the slowdown really occurred from being 25 years on the carrier side. When you would work through those issues with an MGA, or when I was on the MGA side with somebody else, you would work through those initial pieces, but then you would travel to the office and then spend a half day working on issues, have dinner the whole next day, and then people would go home to really put the bow on it with 12 people in a room. That didn't happen, and it turns into 1 hour a week of getting people on a phone, and that ended up proving to be the most challenging, is you couldn't get 12 people on a line for a day and a half. Doesn't happen on Zoom. You do things 1 hour at a time, and so it changed the dynamic, and that stretched things out. Now, we were still able to launch the programs, but instead of taking, say, 90 days to 6 months tops, you know, they were taking 9 to 18 months to get some of these products into the market.
Well, and to your point, some of it's you feel good about it when you're sitting at dinner. You have a glass of wine, you have a good dinner, and you kind of work through some of those. I'm uneasy about this. You know, so much of that interaction with the carriers is face to face and getting a comfort level with each other. So I'm going to kind of pivot a little bit into recruitment. What are you guys doing right now to kind of recruit young talent, recruit, you know, current talent? What's kind of the strategy for talent acquisition for K2 to stay on top?
Well, it starts with trying to get the leaders of the organization, or the different profit centers that we have. So if you find a really strong leader in a line of business, generally people will be attracted to work for those individuals. Two, setting up the compensation plans around that to make sure people are rewarded for the work that they do. And, you know, if our trucking unit does really well, those people get rewarded. And if a property unit lost their profit sharing because of a storm and K2 missed our plan, it doesn't impact the trucking unit. They get a share of what they produce. And so setting up a compensation plan and rewarding people for their actual work does attract excellent talent. But then getting into the younger talent, we are developing some relationships with colleges and universities to do more on-site recruitment. We've started a diversity and inclusion council last year. It took 6 or 9 months for that core council to really set a vision for what they wanted to do. We've recently started to connect the same thing with the women leaders in the company to get connected and to start to have more of an imprint on that. So I think we keep casting a bigger and bigger net for the people that we have. So rather than having just people contact us and come into the organization, is we're also working a lot more on our reach out.
What have you guys been doing to make sure that the culture of K2 is kind of preserved and moving forward? That's kind of instilled in everyone that comes on board.
Yeah, I think it just sits into the middle of almost every conversation we have. And even when we have smaller management meetings, that generally comes up when, you know, even if we're brainstorming something and there's this suggestion to take us in one way or another, even to handle an issue, the thought of where the culture fits in comes up. So it's really at the forefront of everybody's mind, regardless of the decision that it makes or which decision is being made. And that interaction leads it also when we're interviewing somebody or trying to assess whether or not they're going to fit is, you know, how have they worked with the people in the company? How are they interacting with distribution? You know, as they set up, are they looking to come in and have 30 people all on the first day and send the, you know, make the investment very heavy? Or are they going to get their hands dirty and get involved with their system build? Are they going to handle underwriting on that first day until they get $2-3 million in volume and then start hiring a couple people to expand out from that? Or do they have one or two people that will help and then they'll expand out? So I think we do discriminate when somebody comes in, if they're not really looking at doing a lot of the heavy lifting and that they're just going to be the idea person, they're probably not going to fit. But you can get to whether or not somebody is going to do some heavy lifting at the beginning stages. And I'll tell you, on a daily basis, even everybody on the senior leadership is doing their own Excel files, writing their own documents, you know, and highly involved with doing their own analysis. And nobody is just sitting back doing direction.
For some of these younger people that are trying to get in the insurance industry, What's kind of some of the advice? You're a young person trying to get into this field. Do you have any advice for them, or what's kind of the starting point for them?
Yeah, the mentor piece is really important, and it's probably the one that I have the least advice on how to find that, because you have to develop a trusting relationship or have a trusting relationship. So reaching out or not being having the fear of asking somebody that you really trust to get into that role. But having somebody that can give you advice and counsel. The biggest thing that I've found from what I did or personal experience would be to be flexible on where you live. There's a lot of people that when I got out of college, look for jobs back where they grew up or in the vicinity of where they'd just gone to school. And, you know, the moving around for me or moving first to New Jersey where I knew nobody and then to Hawaii where I really knew nobody. It really meant that I got to experience something much different than my past. And there's always jobs somewhere. They might not be here. So if you're always looking in a 20 or 30 mile radius, things change within that radius and they might be good jobs now, but not later. And, you know, being flexible on where you live is with Zoom and FaceTime and planes or drives, you can get back to anywhere. And that's why when people said, do you miss the winters and the changing? The first year I was in Hawaii, I was watching the Aloha Bowl at 10 o'clock in the morning in my shorts. It was like, you know, I don't think about putting on my winter coat and shoveling my driveway.
Yeah.
So you being flexible on where you live is a big part of it. And then obviously putting in the effort, and don't kid yourself about the effort that you're putting in first years. And you see it in a lot of industries, whether it's lawyers or accountants that go in and work for the people that are putting in the 10, 12 hours a day. You shouldn't always have to do that, but finding the time and doing it when it counts is you get exposure to things sometimes you shouldn't. And that's real where you really learn. And the last thing would be, don't have fear of failure. Wear your failures like a badge of honor. I would tell people that every job I've been at is nobody fails in a given year more than I do. And that should come from the, I'm going to attempt to do a lot of things, and I'm going to attempt to do things I'm not capable of.
Yeah.
And that's just really how you get better and make sure that you miss small when you miss.
Yeah. And if you're not even aiming for anything high and you're just sitting there, that's not going to get you anywhere, you know?
It can't help. I mean, don't be afraid. I mean, asking for help doesn't make you weak. Some of those things are hard. You know, I was young and brash and knew everything. When you're never smarter than the day you graduate from college. And you get dumber every day after that. And you just hope that some wisdom fills up in where the knowledge leaves.
That is very true. I'm going to pivot. And what is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word insurtech?
Fluff.
All right. Do you want to elaborate or leave it at that?
You know, as I told you when I saw your technology on the Lost Run Pro is, you know, and I'm not just making this up because I liked what Regan had done was, you know, I've seen a lot of different things over the last few years where either from an investment side is a lot of insurtech has nothing to do with insurance and a lot of it doesn't utilize technology. And most of it doesn't utilize proprietary technology if it's utilizing technology. So that's the thing is just trying to use it as a buzzword really doesn't resonate to me. So peeling back of, are you solving a problem in the insurance process and using technology to do that?
Yeah.
You know, I much prefer tech enabled because I think that is something that I've always tried to aspire to is, let the other tech people provide technology to me to help me become enabled to do my job better. But I don't need the fanciful stuff of being insure tech.
Yeah. What do you think of when you hear insurance disruptor?
Wow. we're probably fluff again. I mean, there's opportunities for people to be disruptors. There's no doubt about it. When I see some things and say, well, is a disruptor somebody that can come in and do a lot of sales? No, you know, coming in and doing the cheap price and just dismissing everything and saying, you know, 400 years of, is stupid. That's not really disruptive. That's actually very easy to do. Selling insurance is not hard. Selling it at a profit and understanding all the math that goes in the back end, that's hard.
Yeah.
So if somebody figures out both ends of those equation, that would be a real disruptor.
Yeah.
And it's not that you wish them bad, but from talking to a couple of them as well is you should still be respectful of the foundation that's there, not be dismissive of it. If you're going to be a disruptor, then disrupt the distribution, but not necessarily the rate making part of it or so.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the piece of being dismissive of everything is challenging. 30 years since I got into the industry, everybody talks about the expense ratio being too high and it has to go lower and lower. And I look at it and go, what we add in the process is all valuable. I think we issue policies, we underwrite, we're interacting with agents and we're solving problems. Like, I don't look at that as being a waste of money. So that means somebody else is wasting money. And really, the markup for insurance, even if you counted just the loss ratio, is somewhere between 1.5 and 2, which is, I would look at the shirt you're wearing and say, how much did that shirt cost and how much did you pay for it? The markups on most other products are more than that. And that's just saying that nothing else in the chain with the licenses and holding the money and issuing a policy and handling claims adds no value. I believe it does. So there's definitely some fat in some people's expenses, but that doesn't mean the entire industry's expense ratio is too high.
This one might get you in a little trouble with K2s. You could wake up tomorrow, you had an unlimited balance sheet, you could do anything you wanted. Where do you think the most lucrative opportunity in insurance is?
I think it is doing what we're doing. I think it's in hiring entrepreneurs and sharing in the profits with as broad a base as you can to produce the best results that you can. Because it keeps decision making in not at an individual level, but at a very small level. And I think small groups work best. I think putting faith in a small number of smart people and hardworking teams and compartmentalizing those teams to stay focused on what they're doing, I think it's a great structure. And, solving problems for customers is valuable.
Yeah. Because I know you're on the same team as Bob Kimmel, who really likes to spend a lot of money on fun things, I'm going to put you on the spot here and say, what is the best insurance event that you've been to over the last few years?
Wow. The best event? You know, we did an agency event at one of my prior companies. We did a couple of them stand out. One of them was here in San Diego, staying at the Hotel Del, where, you know, we had all the agents there and, we had somebody building a sandcastle on the beach and a guy playing guitar and a cookout on the beach and the weather was perfect, you know, in San Diego. So that's a really cool event, obviously, but there's a lot of good events, whether it would be ones that have been in Phoenix or at the Breakers. I mean, the industry does get together for some pretty good gatherings.
Well, I know some of the stuff when I see you guys, I'm like, okay, they were just like Kentucky Derby, the Masters.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't got to go to the Masters yet, which as an avid golfer, I'd like to do. But, and I had gone to about a dozen Opens with my dad because they were always on Father's Day. But hadn't got to go to the Masters.
No, that might be next year for you. Well, I'm going to kind of pivot here till the end. And I kind of like giving everyone their, 30-second, what's your special sauce? You know, what's K2 looking for right now? Is it more entrepreneurs? Is it more distribution? All of the above. You kind of give us the rundown of, what you guys are looking for on a higher level.
Yeah, it's continuing to look for those entrepreneurs and underwriting leaders that want to get into an organization that have a belief in them and that those people have a belief in themselves, that they're willing to put some of that on the line in order to get to where they're going and achieve everything that they want to achieve in their career. And we need to continue to work to have as we've gotten bigger and bigger, more people to support that group as well. But it's a great company with a great future.
That is a wrap for the chatter this week. If you like what you heard here today, join us each week to stay up to date on the insurance trends, best practices, and emerging technologies that are disrupting the insurance industry.